Sam Taylor, our very own beloved Sam Taylor, will be at Barbecues in Patchogue for a 7:30 start. And right across the street at the Brickhouse Brewery, you can catch Little Cliff and the Cliffhangers. And here's today's joke of the day. A man walks into the psychiatrist's office wearing only cling film for shorts. The shrink says, "I can clearly see your nuts." Thanks for listening to the Concert Billboard and WUSB Stony Brook.
Right, it's 6:01. You're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook. Can't believe I'm going to miss Flight of the Conchords. My goodness. It's time, once again, for Off the Wall. Good evening, everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, the 6th day of May, 2008. Are you ready? Yes, we're going to go through it all again. Oh, you know, I get into the whole election thing. I really do. It's kind of fun, especially this time around. But even I'm getting tired of it already. It's the same. I mean, it'd be nice if it was different people every week. But it's the same people every week. It's Clinton versus Obama every single week. You know, we just want answers. We just want it to be finished already. I'm not saying people should drop out. I'm not saying that I think someone should drop out. But the point is, the way this system works, why does it have to work like this? Can someone please explain it to me? I mean, you know, in less than 10 minutes, please just explain it to me. Why we can't have all the primaries at the same time, if we even have to have primaries at all. What are these primaries that people speak of? I don't get it. Other countries, you have an election. You have a campaign, lasts for maybe a month or two, and then you have the election. And what happens? You have a runoff after the election of the top two people, and that takes another couple of months. This has been going on for years. More than a year, this campaign has been going on. And as if to prolong it, to make it as agonizing as possible, it starts in January. It started at the beginning of January with Iowa and New Hampshire and all that. And then, like some kind of slow Chinese torture, one by one, every single state we have to suffer through and see what kind of crises and minutiae get brought up in the weeks and months that follow. Can't just do it all at once. And the crazy thing is, I don't know if you noticed this, but the crazy thing is that the results of the states that follow are heavily dependent on the results of the states that precede. In other words, if Let's say Hillary Clinton, and this is fiction, so don't anybody panic. Let's say Hillary Clinton, during the Pennsylvania primary a couple of weeks ago, let's say that she won something like 80% of the vote. That's, you know, an incredible amount. She did win. She won, I believe, by 10%, but nothing stupendous like that. Let's say, though, that she did. Well, I'll just bet that the results tonight would reflect that. She won 80%. Well, all of a sudden, Obama is not going to win North Carolina anymore because of that. Because of the perception that she's on a roll. And that's how it's been defined from the very beginning. People drop out of the race after Iowa, after the first caucus. They drop out of the race based on that because they know that the results of that race are going to affect the results of the following races. So it doesn't seem very democratic to me. It doesn't seem like the people of states that haven't even voted yet are getting any say whatsoever. And certainly people who aren't a member of a political party, they get less of a say than anybody. People like me, we don't get to say anything until November. Isn't that something? I mean, I'm saying something now, obviously. I'm saying all kinds of things, but I don't get to go into a poll, go into a voting booth, and cast my ballot. I don't get to do that until after it's been decided that it's one of two people. And yeah, you can say, you know, Ralph Nader is running. Okay, great. But we all know it's between two people in the end. That's just the way our system works. That's another reason why it's not truly the voice of the people, because it only comes down to two. But you just look at this whole primary system, and does that seem fair? Does that seem like your vote is actually being counted? I mean, yeah, it's counted during your week, but the week that's happening right now, which is North Carolina and Indiana, well, you don't get to vote for Huckabee, do you? Because it's already been decided that Huckabee's a loser. Yeah, he's gone. History. Yesterday's news. It just seems like we should all have the same voice, the same ability to vote for these candidates. And that's another thing. We don't even get to vote for candidates. We're voting for delegates. Why can't we just vote for the damn candidates? Who are these delegates anyway? Why are they even there? What is the reason for this? Are we so afraid to simply have people say, yes, I am going to vote for Hillary Clinton, or I'm going to vote for Barack Obama, or I'm going to vote for John McCain, rather than inserting these go-betweens, these middlemen, if you will, that in fact are the ones that get to say that they're voting for these people? And in some cases, they don't even have to reflect the will of the people. And then, I'm not even counting the superdelegates yet. I haven't gotten to them. Oh my God. Can you imagine how the rest of the world looks upon us? It's like we're afraid to vote. We're afraid to vote for people. We have to put every kind of barrier in place to prevent the will of the people from being heard. So you have this crazy primary set up, which, my God, you have to be a mathematician to figure it all out. Even though we called the race for Obama many weeks ago. Point is, it's anything but voting directly for your candidate. You've got the primaries, you've got the delegates, you've got the superdelegates, and if that's not enough for you, you've got the Electoral College in November. That's how we got Bush to start with. People didn't vote for Bush, they voted for Gore. But we got Bush because of the Electoral College, which still exists 8 years later and isn't going anywhere. That's another problem with this country. We can't seem to make any kind of radical change. I guess because of that word radical. We don't like the word radical, do we? I happen to like the word radical. In fact, it's got scientific meaning as well. It's a math term. It is. Maybe that's why a lot of people do badly at math. But sometimes you need radical change. And boy, do we ever need radical change. So, you know, this is my proposition to the powers that be. And I know they listen. I know you listen, powers that be. I know you're out there. I'm not mocking you. I'm just saying I know you're out there. How you doing? My proposal to you is that we simply try it a different way. Next time we just start the campaign, start the campaign in May. Like this month, the campaign would start. Everybody's running, okay? You hash it all out in August, and you basically pick a candidate for your particular party. And there's more than two parties. Let's say there's 20 parties. Everybody picks their candidate. And then, get this, come November, we have an election where people vote for the candidate of their choice. Now, bear with me here. They vote for the candidate of their choice, and then we count those votes. We do. And we take the two top people that go over a certain percentage. I'm not exactly sure how it works. I think it's like 30% or something, 40% maybe. And those people, a few weeks later, have a runoff. And then whoever wins, wins. Period. And we can talk about coalitions and what the second place person gets and all that, but basically that is how the will of the people is heard. I don't understand any of this nonsense. Why it has to work this way. It's so expensive. It's so time consuming. Oh, and here's another suggestion. Have election day on a weekend. In fact, have it be the entire weekend. That way people have a better chance of making it to the polls. And if you must have it on Tuesday, and God knows why you have to have it on Tuesday, is it because of the whole traveling from the farm thing from the 1800s? This is what I heard, that people would leave from the farm on Sunday and would take them until Tuesday to get to the polling booth, and then they'd have to turn around and go, I don't understand why we hold on to these ancient rules and customs. Why else is Election Day on the first or sometimes second Tuesday of November? It's not on the first Tuesday if it's the first of November. You can't have that. Because then you have the farmers traveling on Halloween, and apparently that's bad. Oh, boy, we are in such need of reform, just in the process, let alone in the government itself. You know, I love it when I come in here, and basically the only sentence in my head when I sat down was, it's primary day in North Carolina and Indiana. And look what happened. It's sticking in my craw, if you will. Not quite sure where my craw is, but something is definitely stuck in there, and that's what this is. I'd like to hear from people tonight. In fact, I do want to take phone calls tonight, so mark that down. If you're planning on going out, cancel those plans, because you'll be making a phone call to us later on, especially if you're from North Carolina or Indiana. We don't have our correspondents from North Carolina or Indiana reachable tonight. Apparently they're out doing something irresponsible. So, if you're from either of those states, write down this number, area code 631-632-WUSB, 631-632-9872. We'll be taking phone calls a little bit later on. Of course, we welcome calls from anybody, but particularly those of you who are in the states that today are in the spotlight. It must be so crazy for people overseas to watch our system, because it just seems like we never want it to end. Every week can you imagine if we were watching the elections in Germany, you know, and it's like Bavaria one week and some other province or whatever they call them over there another week, and it just goes on for a year, how sick of it we get? I mean, we learn a lot about their geography. Maybe this is why the rest of the world understands our geography better than we do, or better certainly than we understand their geography, because we thrust our states into the limelight for all this time. I mean, Guam. Guam was in the news over the weekend because they had a primary. And I heard Obama won by like 9 votes or something. It's a very tiny place. It's sort of like, you know, we're just showing every possible angle of the country. I guess that's all right. But this is really, it's really costly for all of us because, I mean, I like to see the issues addressed. I really do. But, wow, this just does not end. And I think it's important for every candidate to be called on all sorts of issues and questions, not just the same old nonsense we keep hearing, not just Reverend Wright and the gas tax and the economy, maybe a little bit more about the war. There's not enough about that. But it just seems like the same things are being said over and over again. A good example of an exception to this, go to www.advocate.com. That's the gay magazine, The Advocate. Barack Obama gives an interview there, which is really incredible. It really is very open, upfront, I think honest, addresses a lot of issues directly. I'd like to see every candidate be interviewed by that paper about gay, lesbian, transgender issues. Yeah, I know there's people out there rolling their eyes. Well, it matters. It does. And how people react, that matters. And that tells you something about the people. And if they can't even take the time or have the inclination to communicate, that tells you something. And if anyone has other websites or interviews that they'd like to point me to, I'll be happy to share those with the people here. But that one especially just had me riveted. It came out a few weeks ago, actually, but it's a rare thing. It's a rare thing to see, I guess, alternative media actually having a sit-down with somebody running for a national office who doesn't seem afraid to talk to them. All right, let's look at a New York Times roundup of today's activities. We don't have any results. We won't have results on this show. But, you know, I don't want to say it again, because it's probably not going to happen, but tonight could decide, finally, who the nominee will be for the Democratic Party. We know who the nominee for the Republican Party is, George W. Bush. We all know this. And it all depends, really, on three scenarios. Let's go into this New York Times article, because I think they did a very good job summing up the possibilities here. The Democratic presidential primaries taking place today in North Carolina and Indiana have more delegates up for grabs than any of the remaining contests. For political, demographic, and mathematical reasons, those states have the potential to reshape the competition between Senators Clinton and Obama. Now, it'll be an opportunity for Mrs. Clinton to make the case that Democratic sentiment is swinging in her favor. This is what we talked about earlier. The swinging of the pendulum. Started with Pennsylvania. I don't know why Pennsylvania would influence other states, but it can happen. And also to slice into Mr. Obama's lead in pledged delegates and in the popular vote, putting aside the disputed contest in Florida and Michigan. Let's not even go there today. For Mr. Obama, it's a chance to tamp down talk. I like that word, tamp. That Mrs. Clinton has exposed him as a flawed general election candidate. Flawed. You can tell where Mrs. Clinton and Mr. Obama think they have their best shot by where they will be on Tuesday night. Mrs. Clinton has a hotel ballroom in Indianapolis. And Mr. Obama finally decided on a rally at a Colosseum in ancient Rome. No, in Raleigh, North Carolina. Wouldn't that be something? But to say that both sides are anxious would be an understatement. And with that in mind, here are three possible outcomes to watch for tonight, in no particular order. Three possible outcomes. Mrs. Clinton wins both states. Mr. Obama wins both states. Or they split. I don't mean they leave. I mean they split. One wins one state, one wins the other. Okay, so let's look at number one. Mrs. Clinton wins. Don't you like how the New York Times calls her Mrs. Clinton? It's just kind of nice. Number one, Mrs. Clinton wins Indiana and North Carolina. Given the obstacles that face her, a sweep by Mrs. Clinton on Tuesday is one outcome that could, to borrow a phrase from Mr. Obama, change the world, or at least begin to. That's a sign that she is gaining momentum in the race, says Ron Klain, a Democratic consultant who has not taken sides. How much such a result would change the race would depend on the contours of her victories. Now, we did calculations months ago, didn't we? We tried to figure out how much it would take for Hillary Clinton to win. And she'd have to have in excess of 60% of every single race until the end to catch up. Not counting the superdelegates, of course. And even with the somewhat large Pennsylvania victory of 10 percentage points, she doesn't have that. And that's about as good as it's going to get for her, in my opinion. Now, a month ago, Indiana was considered relatively even, with perhaps a slight edge to Mr. Obama of Illinois. Indiana is the first state that borders Illinois, and 25% of our primary electorate get their television news out of Chicago, said Dan Parker, the Indiana Democratic chairman who is backing Mrs. Clinton. By contrast, Mr. Obama seemed to hold such an advantage in North Carolina that Mrs. Clinton's aides debated making only a token effort there. Now, though, both campaigns see both states as highly competitive, as evidenced by the amount of time Mrs. Clinton and Mr. Obama have spent there in recent days. Mrs. Clinton has said she expects to win in Indiana. Candidates do not normally do that. If Mr. Obama loses in Indiana because of white blue collar support. This is getting silly. White blue collar support from Mrs. Clinton. It would be the third time in a row after Ohio and Pennsylvania that he has lost a big state because of an inability to win over enough of those kinds of voters. Mrs. Clinton has argued that those losses in the primary. I don't know how to say that word, so I'm going to say a different word. Foretell. Is that a good word? Yeah, poorly. Foreshadow. Poorly for Mr. Obama in the future. In the fall, rather. Historically, that is debatable. But another defeat at the hands of middle-class white voters in Indiana would add to the perception that he could lose in the general election. See, it's all about perception. And that's what could happen. The perception from losing Indiana by a fairly healthy margin would be that, he's going to lose all the states then. Anyway, should Mrs. Clinton win North Carolina or come close, with white support for her overwhelming Mr. Obama's presumed strength among blacks there, that would fuel the argument that he has been hurt by his ties to his former pastor, the Reverend Jeremiah Wright. Steve Jordan, a Democratic consultant who has not taken sides in the race, said, have any of them taken sides? Anyway, if he loses both, and don't forget he had a 25-point lead in North Carolina, then you've got to look at what has happened over the past 4 weeks, and Reverend Wright comes to the fore. The race at this point is at least as much about superdelegates as it is about voters in the remaining primary states, and a double Clinton victory could bolster her argument to superdelegates that Mr. Obama may struggle in November against Senator John McCain, the likely Republican nominee. Whether that is enough to get them to make the leap of voting for Mrs. Clinton, if Mr. Obama leads her after June 3rd, in the overall popular vote and pledged delegates, is another question, which is why her campaign has renewed efforts to get Florida and Michigan delegates, elected in primaries carried out in defiance of the Democratic Party rules, seated at the convention. Now, one thing to keep in mind, the next contest next week is in West Virginia, which is another state where the demographics would seem to favor Mrs. Clinton. Okay, scenario number two. I'm going to stop with this Mr. and Mrs. nonsense, all right? It's driving me crazy. All right, Obama wins North Carolina and Indiana. That's scenario number two. A double Obama victory would almost certainly mean lights out for the Clinton campaign. That would signal the end of the Clinton campaign, said Jerry Meek, the chairman of the North Carolina Democratic Party, who, yes, you guessed it, has not endorsed anyone. I don't see how she could continue. He added she'd be fighting a losing battle. The ever-tenacious Mrs. Clinton has proven so eager to keep fighting that she might try to soldier on. It would be a tough, lonely road. Several of her advisors have said they would counsel her to quit the race if she lost both North Carolina and Indiana. So, folks, that's what to look for tonight. It's almost certain that Obama will win North Carolina. If he also wins Indiana, then you can bet that several of her advisors will be counseling her to quit the race. And that's got to mean something. Even if she resisted, twin victories by Mr. Obama would go a long way to addressing concerns about the damage Mr. Wright inflicted on him, as well as his ability to, as Clinton says, close the deal. You know, I think when this is all over, it's going to be discovered that this Reverend Wright is being paid off by somebody. I mean, you could not cause more damage to somebody by saying stupid things than this idiot has. And that coming from somebody who agrees with a lot of his conclusions. But wow, talk about disrespecting people. Talk about burning bridges. I mean, here's a guy who could have had an audience with the next president, be taken seriously. Instead, just be clowning around on stage and saying some really offensive and immature and stupid things. But that's a whole other issue. It's difficult to envision what Clinton's argument would be to stay in the race should she lose both states tonight. More than that, Obama would no doubt encourage superdelegates, many of whom have been holding back to see how the voting plays out, to rally around him and bring the race to a close. And if there ever was a moment for the party's big leaders to step forward, this would be it. And, of course, the third possibility, a split decision. The most likely split would be Mrs. Clinton winning. I'm sorry, I said it again. It's just the New York Times does this. Would be Clinton winning Indiana and Obama winning North Carolina. That would almost surely mean the race would go on. And, of course, you know that's what's going to happen. Because we're going to be back here next week talking about West Virginia. Not that I don't like talking about West Virginia. In fact, I'm going to be driving through West Virginia, in all likelihood. Going to the Dayton Hamvention, which takes place a week from this coming weekend. If I can find a place to stay. Yeah, all the hotels are full because of all the ham people that are showing up. And apparently some of the hotels went out of business, but didn't bother to tell the people who made reservations last year. And there's a whole big mess in Dayton. But that's a whole other issue, too. Anyway, it would not be easy for Clinton to fight on if she cannot use Tuesday to make some progress in the battle for pledged delegates and the popular vote. Now, keep in mind, the way this whole thing works with the delegates, even with her big victory a couple of weeks ago in Pennsylvania, 10-point spread, she didn't pick up that many delegates, only a handful, because it's not a winner-take-all situation, which is what the lunacy of the Electoral College is. Republicans win one particular state, have more electoral votes, they take the entire state. Your vote doesn't count at all. So Pennsylvania, let's say they get more electoral college votes for McCain than for whoever wins the Democratic nomination, it's as if there was no candidate for the Democratic nomination. It's really it's a silly system, but don't get me started on that again. Anyway, her own advisors say her best hope of getting superdelegates to vote against pledged delegates is if, after the final primaries on June 3rd, yes, this does end at some point, she is close to Mr. Obama in pledged delegates and ahead in the popular vote. That's not very likely to happen, though. The only way she could be ahead in the popular vote, in all likelihood, would be if Michigan and Florida were counted as is. And that just is insanity, since Barack Obama wasn't even on the ballot in Michigan. But the conclusive statement of this article, the math still favors Senator Obama, no matter what happens Tuesday. But a double victory would certainly go a long way towards bringing this thing to an end, once and for all. All right, so that's where we stand. Polls will be closing soon in North Carolina and Indiana. And in a few hours, we'll know something. But I fear that it's going to be Obama winning North Carolina and Clinton winning Indiana, and this whole thing just keeps going. Of course, the whole thing will probably keep going regardless, but seriously, if Obama were to win both states, it would just be going in fantasy land. And if Clinton wins both states, well, it's going to get interesting. But I really don't see that happening. Okay, let's see. We have letters that we'd like to read. And, of course, our email address, otw@2600.com. Let me say now, since I'd like to get, we had a bunch of good phone calls last week, so I'd like to try and get more good phone calls this week. So let's read letters for about 10 minutes. How's that? And then write down the phone number. Country code 1. Area code 631. Phone number 632-9872. That spells WUSB. What you do is you pick up the phone, you call that number. I pick up the phone, I say hello, you're on the air. You begin speaking. And guess what? You're on the air. Not just to this area, not just to Long Island, but to all the world through the Internet, through the marvels of the Internet. And, if that's not enough, you're archived forever. Yeah, that's right, you're archived on the off-the-wall archives. Found at www.2600.com/off-the-wall, where every single show is stored. Years from now, you can show your grandkids the highlight of your life when you called in to this radio show and said what you had to say over the air. Yeah, it's that easy. Okay, so let's read some letters, and in about 10 minutes we'll take phone calls. Please don't disappoint. I'd like to see a full line, full switchboard. Okay, dear Off the Wall, I was listening to your recent... Actually, you know what? You sent this to Off the Hook. And fortunately for you, we were able to salvage it from the off-the-hook mail bin and send it over to the off-the-wall mail bin. Because here you say you were listening to Off the Hook, but you're talking about things that I was talking about on Off the Wall. It's two entirely different programs on two entirely different radio stations. The only similarity is that I'm both. I am on both, and they have the first two words the same. Those are the only similarities. All right. Anyway, I was listening to your recent Off the Wall, and you mentioned how SUVs, and Hummers in particular, push their way through any situation. I had that literally happen. Yeah, listen to this. I was invited to videotape a friend's son's high school graduation. After the event, several thousand people dashed for the parking lot, which was served by only one entrance slash exit. Lines began to form for in makeshift fashion. Before long, large monster trucks and SUVs began lining up along the lines of cars, perpendicular to the cars, in menacing fashion. And this is incredible. You've seen this happen. If you drive, you've seen this happen. And soccer moms are the ones driving them, but they're driving like, you know, like tank commanders and military Gestapo. Basically, you get in one of these huge vehicles and you just think you can run the world. It's comical, but it's also scary. People are dying because of this mentality. Anyway, occasionally, one would insert itself into the line well ahead of the end of what was by then a well-defined line. The first challenge came from a huge, jacked-up Ford pickup. I managed to ward it off with a flash from my digital camera. That's an interesting approach. The second threat, a Hummer H2 with wife and back seats full of kids, was just plain undeterrable. It was too dark to use my video camera, so I stuck my digital still camera out the window and flashed off a couple of shots as the charging menace closed the distance. He remained undeterred. I hugged the bumper of the car in front, hoping to send the signal that this little VW was not going to cave in to road rage terrorism. And then it happened. The wheel of the Hummer nudged and then pushed my car laterally several feet, making room for him to insert his towering bone crusher in front of me in line. The kids in the backseat of the Hummer looked down in amusement and undoubtedly respect for Dad's talent at getting his way. What a fine example. Then I spied a motorcycle cop riding herd about 40 yards to my left. I yelled to him and told him what had just happened, if only he'd seen. The motor cop pulled up beside the Hummer, and to my amazement, the guy in the Hummer began bad-mouthing the cop, insisting he had a right to do what he'd done because I was obligated to yield to his butting-in-line maneuver. It's incredible, isn't it? They went back and forth, and just as I thought the cop was going to open the guy's door and drag him out and hogtie him, he just told me to pull over as he told him to pull over as he told me as well. I showed the cop the photo of the Hummer. You're well prepared, I gotta say. The photo of the Hummer about to crash into me, and we both observed the mark where the Hummer's tire had rubbed my bumper. All you need is a judge. You really do. Just get a judge in there, and this whole thing will be settled right away. The officer asked if I wanted to press charges. I told him that seeing him put the guy in his place in front of his wife and kids was reward enough for me, and we all went out. Outweigh. I'm not quite sure what you mean by that, but I'd like to know who went first. I think that's kind of important. Anyway, I can relate 100% with your observations on driving a sensible car among pseudo-military vehicles. This guy targeted me because I was in a small, older vehicle and just plain pushed me aside because he didn't want to wait his turn. I sent my information of this incident to... okay, this is interesting. Interesting website. www.lacantdrive.com. Is that an L or is that a 1? I think that's an L. lacantdrive.com. /2008/02/09/acollisionwithmaliciousintent with the words separated by hyphens. And you can see the photo I refer to above, signed Carl. Carl, you're amazing. You really are. And hats off to you for sticking with it and actually taking this fight to as far as you could reasonably take it. I mean, you could have pressed charges, I guess. I just would have drawn the thing out even further. The important thing is to make people think twice before they do this again. And it's just incredible. What you mentioned before about setting an example in front of his kids. Yeah, you know, his kids are going to grow up thinking this is the way you behave. And it just is not. I'll tell you, it's one of the reasons why I keep hoping that gas prices go up so idiots like that suffer more and more. and have to really think twice about the choices they make. And actually, as far as that sentiment goes, somebody else wrote in and said, Emmanuel, why stop at $10 a gallon? Keep going to 50 or more, and then we'll all be walking or riding horses again. Well, maybe so. Maybe so, but I think the point needs to be made that there's a reasonable way of doing things. We do need vehicles. We need to get around. There's a big place. And I think we've outgrown horse and buggy days. But some of the morons going around in these 5 mile a gallon vehicles. I mean, you gotta speak up and do something. If you can't force them off the road with the rules of the road, then you have to force them off the road economically. I know that can hurt. But everything has a price. The last gas crisis that we had back in the 70s, people actually did things. They changed the way that they lived their lives for the better. And you see the results today. I mean, recycling is one reason. It's one thing to come out of all the energy crises that we had in the past. And small cars to start with. We didn't have small cars in this country. Now we do. It's just that we seem to have this this neocon attitude that bigger is better, that might makes right. And no matter how bad it gets, they're going to continue trying to have their way. And I'm all for them continuing to try. But I'm also all for making it as hard as possible. Here's an interesting story that appeared in today's Newsday. Long Islanders have switched to energy-efficient light bulbs and adjusted their thermostats, but the region's green revolution may stop in the driveway. Yeah, most residents have no plans to abandon their sport utility vehicles or spacious sedans for smaller, more fuel-efficient vehicles. That's according to a Long Island Index poll released on Monday. That survey asked more than 850 Long Island residents their opinions on climate change and energy efficiency. Results were mixed. Nearly three-quarters of respondents said they believe global warming is already happening, but more than half said it would not threaten them or their way of life during their lifetimes. The poll showed residents were willing to adopt some changes wholeheartedly. More than 90% said they would choose an energy-efficient appliance over a cheaper but less efficient model. But one sacrifice many Long Island drivers appear unwilling to make is swapping a bigger vehicle for a more fuel-efficient model. Conducted amid rising fuel prices in February and March, the survey showed that while one-tenth of drivers would consider buying a hybrid and 14% would consider a compact, roughly two-thirds of drivers preferred something other than a smaller car with better gas mileage. Nearly three-quarters now drive SUVs, trucks, and medium-sized cars such as sedans or station wagons. Economic, generational, and political divides also shaped responses. Affluent liberal residents tended to show more support for shouldering upfront costs of big investments in future energy efficiency. All told, 46% of those surveyed said they would pay more on their electric bill if the Long Island Power Authority developed large-scale solar and wind power projects. Only 32% of those making less than $35,000 backed an increase, compared with 57% of those earning $100,000 or more. Not too hard to figure that out, I suppose. But the driving SUV thing, man, that's just stupid. You're hurting yourself. I mean, I know the things, you bought the things, you paid all this money for them, you didn't listen to me years ago, and now you're stuck with them. But the answer is not to hold on to them. No, and the answer is not to be stubborn here. Donate it to Venezuela, because gas is something like 30 cents a gallon down there, and maybe you can get a trade-in and get a nice little subcompact or something. This is I looked at the forums. You know, I hate the forums over at Newsday because they're full of racist idiot pigs, and that's just the way it is. But sometimes there's a funny comment that slips through, and here's one of them. I have two SUVs, one as a work vehicle for the farm. Yes, it's a farm here on Long Island. 50 points to anybody who can find it. The other gets me from Long Island to Bridgewater with equipment, two dogs, children, a wife, and a mother. I would need three small cars to do that, and the gas cost would be the same. Perhaps if people, instead of judging your neighbors, judged yourself only. That sentence never really finished, but I get the point. It takes more gas to transport a 220-pound man than it does to transport a 125-pound man. I'll sell my SUVs when you big, energy-wasting fat people stop eating. I love logic of people that really are desperately clinging on to whatever it is they have. Fact is, yeah, you know, if you have dogs to transport, and you're driving everywhere with your kids and your wife and your mother, yeah, you do need a big vehicle for that. You can't cram them all into a Volkswagen. No question about that. I could get into maybe not having so many kids, but no, that's a whole other argument right there. If you need to transport everybody, your entire household, frequently back and forth, then yes, you do need a big vehicle for that. But do you need to drive the big vehicle all the time? Because half the time when I'm out on the highway, I see a bunch of you thickheads out there driving these massive vehicles, and you're the only person in them. You're not carrying two dogs and children and a wife and a mother. You're not carrying farm equipment. You're going out to 7-Eleven to get a quart of milk. And you're paying more in gas than it costs to buy the thing in the first place. That's stupid. So, yeah, hold on to your big vehicle for those moments when you have to transport everybody. And I would try to make those moments fewer and far between. Unless you really have to move everybody back and forth all the time. And then you have the economy car. Or, God forbid, a bicycle for those times when you just have to go someplace and back without lugging a whole lot of equipment or people with you. That's called changing the way you think, adjusting to the environment, becoming healthier, and as a result, having all society become healthier, instead of clinging to things that don't make any sense and simply make everything worse for everybody. It's like people who continue to smoke after it's proven that it's so bad for you. But I don't know, I guess they think that if they continue doing it, somehow that's going to negate the facts. It's an addiction. It's all addictions. Okay, just about time for us to take phone calls. I'm going to continue reading some letters when I see the calls start coming in. Then I'm going to go into delay and take phone calls. So again, 631-632-9872. And you know my rule. Have to see at least two lights lit. Now, you might get disconnected. If you do, just call right back. It doesn't cost you anything. There's a timeout, you know. That's how it works. Okay, Dear Manuel, I forgot to email you last week, but now I'm listening to this week's Off the Wall, and I'm reminded of your street name questions. There is a suburb of Portland, Oregon, that called King City, where all the roads are named after former kings and queens of England. Just thought I'd throw that out there. I'm a listener of Off the Wall and off the hook for about 8 years now. Of course, Off the Wall has only been on for 5 years, but that's okay. I've also been reading 2600 since 1995. Keep up the good work. Signed, Grendel. Thank you, Grendel, for writing in. And let's see, we have this letter here. I noticed while listening to the latest show that the left channel is much louder and distorts on louder sounds. I looked at the actual wave display, and sure enough, the peaks are flattened on the left. I had to convert to mono using the right channel to listen comfortably. Yes, I have to have balanced sound. Maybe I'm unusual. Just thought I'd let you know. Signed, M. Thank you, M, for bringing that to our attention. I think that's the WUSB stream you must have been listening to, the high-quality, quote-unquote, stream. Because we don't normally have a stereo version of the show anyway online in the archives. What we have, though, what we do have, we have all of the shows that have been recorded onto CD and basically archived at much higher quality, kind of similar to what Off the Hook does. We have not yet released that. If there is an interest in releasing Off the Wall as a DVD set, one per year perhaps, then we'll do the work to produce that. But they do exist. They do exist. So by all means, if you're interested in that, let us know. otw@2600.com. This is going to be another one of these nights where I have to beg for phone calls and there's nobody out there? I hope not, because, you know, it's a big sacrifice for me to come in here and babble for an hour. All I'm asking is for other people to babble as well. Dear Off the Wall, to start this out, I have had a few beers in me already when I listened to this episode. That's fine. In fact, that's encouraged. I listen to your shows by download because I'm at work when you air your shows live. One of these days, I'd like to listen to you live. It's not as thrilling as you might think. Anyway, I wanted to comment on an email you received from someone, didn't catch the name of who it was, but I do remember that the person sent the email. You found out that he was in a picture next to Hillary Clinton and that he was trashing Obama, and in the email he sent, talked about Obama joining Martin Luther King and John F. Kennedy in the grave, And apparently he did some research to find out who this guy actually was. Well, actually, it wasn't really research. He sent it in with his real name, and simply looking up that real name into Google, you see him standing next to Hillary Clinton, both of them with big smiles on their faces. And hopefully Hillary Clinton doesn't know what kind of a Looney Tune this guy really is. Maybe he had a few beers in him when he said it, but still, it's a dumbass thing to say. And, I don't know. Anyway, to get on with the story, a few other people and myself that I work with have talked about this to an extreme extent, about Obama, and all of us have come to the conclusion that if Obama were to take office, that someone would assassinate him, and it would just be a matter of time as to when. If you look at the greats that have stood against society and the government, at some point, they all have been erased and silenced in history. And to me, it's really a shame that the people that stand for what we believe in are dealt with in this manner. We may be speculating or paranoid, but history doesn't lie. If Obama wins, I hope that we will stand the test of time. Again, please forgive me if things seem a bit off or things are not spelled correctly. I have been tipping back a few as I write this. Fine, Donnie. Donnie, it came out fine. You are more literate than people who don't drink anything. And you raise a very good point that our country does have a history of that sort of thing. And let's hope that we can defy the odds if this is the path that we go down. Because it's just, it always sets us back so far when idiocy reigns. And you can have it in so many ways. You can have it through acts of violence. You can have it through stupid words. There's all sorts of ways. But let's not let that influence how we think and what we do. Because every day is a risk of one sort or another. Okay, I see we have some phone calls. Now, please stay on the line while we go into delay, because that's an important part of the whole process, and I invariably am going to mess this up somehow. So please stand by. Again, a phone number is 631-632-9872.
And I hope you have a lot of fun.
And we're back. Back live here on the... of course, I find a different way to mess it up every single time. This time I forgot to bring up the sound of the ID that was bringing us into delay. So here we are. We're in delay. And good. We have phone calls. Shall we take some phone calls? 631-632-9872. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Good evening.
How you doing? Where are you calling from?
Selden.
Selden. Okay. You're one of our regular callers, I think.
15 years, yeah.
15 years of calling us. Well, that's anything but regular. What's on your mind?
I really like the point that you brought to the fore about the archaic thing about voting on a Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
That was brilliant. I mean, that says something. You know, it happens this election, the word elite was used, you know, as an attack word.
Right.
Really, I think, aren't we talking about that's been a problem for over 100 years, the elite, you have to be elite to get into that level of politics.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, do you think that story is true, what I thought it was, that it has to do with farmers traveling on Sunday to get there by Tuesday?
Whatever. Okay, that sounds plausible. Whatever.
Yeah. I can't think of any other reason, to be honest.
Whatever. It's archaic. We agree it's archaic.
Oh, yeah.
It's not changes because they're all elitists, and it's been a problem of elitism for 100 years.
Absolutely. And there's so many other instances of it. This whole Electoral College, I mean, that's outdated, too. So many things are outdated.
That point also. But, all right, man, I'll let you go. And thanks for taking phone calls.
Okay.
I feel embarrassed being a listener girl for 15 years, so I want to bow out.
Oh, it's something to be proud of. But thanks for your support, and thanks for calling
okay.
us.
Later.
And, oh, look at that. They hung up. The other We had two phones ringing, and they both hung up at the same time. 631-632-9872. Call right back, because the phone company's greedy and they disconnect you after a certain number of rings. We could put you on hold. We could put you on hold, but then you have to pay. And we try to save you wherever possible. Okay. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hey, good evening.
How you doing? Where are you calling from?
Something other than the election?
Yes, but tell us where you're calling from first.
Okay. Calling from West Babylon.
Okay, that's here in New York. What's on your mind?
Okay, one of the newspapers produced at Stony Brook University is called The Press.
Yes, the Stony Brook Press.
Right. In April 16th edition, there's some kind of a reference to a pornography movie made in the 70s that it was filmed at Stony Brook University.
Debbie Does Dallas?
Yeah, did you read that one?
We're very proud of this, but the thing that bothers me is that Dallas, you know, that sort of implies that it was made in Dallas, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you would think, but most of the movies made during that era are probably made in California, though.
Yeah, well, maybe cheap labor laws or something. I don't know, but that's one of the things. If you come to Stony Brook and you're a freshman, I think that's in the freshman handout. The things we're very proud of culturally is that parts of Debbie Does Dallas was filmed in Stony Brook. Or am I getting that wrong?
Well, all right, here's the thing. In the article, it says that the Internet Movie Database says that it was filmed there,
mm-hmm.
and there's also something else from another website, but I actually went a step further and watched the movie, and I can tell you I know what the library, what the interior of the library looks like since 1980, since I've been there.
Have you been in the sub-basement?
Well, no, actually, the book stacks.
Okay, yeah, the stacks, right. A number of films have been made there, I think, actually.
The book stacks in the movie
mm-hmm.
are really archaic and ancient-looking. Like, they're made like in the 1920s or something, and it doesn't have the appearance of that. And also, in the football field, supposedly where it was filmed, the background, you don't see any buildings that resemble the chemistry building, the physics building,
mm-hmm.
or anything. And also, it looked like in the movie it was made with artificial turf, which doesn't exist at Stony Brook.
Or many other places at that time. Well, you know, I guess I'm going to stop at my public library on the way home tonight and pick up a copy of this and research it myself and see just where this might have been filmed. Another possibility is we can contact the actors and directors that were part of this production and see if they can just tell us where it was filmed.
Actually, in the article it says that one was contacted, but they couldn't be reached directly, but something like their associate was contacted, and they said that it wasn't filmed there. But
who starts these rumors? I mean, who was the person who said that it was filmed at Stony Brook then?
I have no idea. I don't know how is it. It's in the Internet Movie Database,
which anybody can edit.
Oh, really?
Well,
okay.
Almost. You have to have an account, but you can add things, and unless somebody disputes it, it becomes fact.
Okay, that's interesting. I don't know why anybody would put that there. I guess it's a spoof.
Yeah, that's a very good reason, in fact. There's all sorts of things you can change. In fact, I'm looking forward to the day when we discover that entire bits of history that have been written in Wikipedia never happened, and yet our children are being taught them based on somebody editing something one day.
Also, one other quick thing. Have you noticed any bulletins or like flyers going around about the opposition to all the destruction on the campus of the like the buildings and the tearing down of the bridge and the putting up of the sports, you know, stadium or anything like that?
No, I have not. I'd like to know more about it if there is opposition to that, because I certainly think a lot of these moves are ill-advised at best.
Actually, one of the people, I know one of the people in the small group that are sort of organizing like a protest to that, and I think one of the flyers was sent to you. I don't know if you've received it at the station.
I can't even find my mailbox here. My name fell off my mailbox, and I can't find it anymore. But if you have information as to a demonstration or a meeting or anything like that, feel free to let us know over the air. Do you have that information with you?
Nothing has been scheduled yet, I don't think, as far as a demonstration, but I know there's a small group of people are just putting information together and just...
Okay, well, email us, otw@2600.com, and we'll be happy to read it over the air.
Yeah, one was also mailed to the Middle Island Post Office box for the 2600 subscriptions.
Really? Okay. Maybe it's in a pile of mail then.
I think about a week ago.
Okay. We'll definitely look out for that. Listen, I'm going to move on to some more calls. Thanks for calling in.
Okay. Thank you.
And good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hey, good evening, Emmanuel.
How you doing? Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico. Wow. The place we don't know whether they call a state or a colony or a territory or whatnot.
I've lived here for about a year, and I'm not quite sure what it is.
Uh-huh. Wow. You don't sound, you don't have an accent.
No, I'm actually from Iowa, which is kind of why I'm calling.
You called WBAI last week on the report to the listener and said some nice things about Off the Hook, I know.
Yeah, that was me.
Yeah, we're watching you, yes. Okay, so what's on your mind?
Well, I'm just thinking about how I was actually participating in the last two different primaries in Iowa for the last two different elections, and
uh-huh.
It's a lot different down here in Puerto Rico, where their primary is on June 1st, and it's like they don't even start to even follow it until, like, maybe April.
Yeah, it's interesting. Now, Puerto Rico, 2 days away from the very end of this whole thing, I guess all eyes will be on them if it's still going on like it is now.
And it's like nobody even really cares here at all. They just feel they have no voice anyway, so.
I can't say I blame them. I can't even understand why they agree to be part of this in the first place. Do you get a sense that people there are fed up with being part of the United States in any form?
Well, they're eager to, a lot of them are eager to be part of the United States, but they're just kind of like half citizens right now, so they just don't care.
Yeah, I mean, they don't really seem to be getting much out of that deal in the first place.
I just kind of, a lot of people say they just hope and pray that McCain doesn't, you know, become our next president. That's the only thing they're rooting for, really.
That would be something else, it really would be. Listen, we're just about out of time, so any final words you'd like to share with our listeners?
No, it's the internet stream is kind of bad tonight, so.
Well, we'll be archived by the end of the evening, and then you can simply download us and listen without any interruption.
All right.
Thanks for calling in, and best of luck down there. All right. Listener from Iowa transplanted to Puerto Rico. Doesn't get any more interesting than that, does it? Well, I guess that's going to pretty much do it for us here tonight. Some housekeeping notes. Tomorrow night on Off the Hook, we have a fundraiser. Yes, another fundraiser. It's the... I guess it's the spring fundraiser, right? Because it's May, and we'll be raising all kinds of funds for the radio station there. It's a necessary part, a necessary evil of the entire process. So please be there with your support. I should also point out many of you have contacted us asking about Hope tickets, tickets to The Last Hope coming up in July. And all I can say on that matter is that if you really want a good deal, listen to the show tomorrow between 7 and 8 on the other radio station or over our website, and you'll get a pretty good deal. But you got to listen, you got to call during that particular time. And for those of you thinking of getting involved in the conference, please do. It is the last hope, after all. And, you know, it's magic. It's magic what we do every couple of years in New York City, where hackers from all over the world come together and put on amazing shows and talks and panels and projects, things like that. It changes people's lives. So start looking into the airfares now. Yes, it might be a bit expensive. It's worth it. Book your hotel rooms. Figure it all out. www.hope.net. We're about to launch a brand new website. We're going to have all sorts of announcements on fun things that we're going to be doing. But the important thing is to be there and to not let this opportunity go by, because, well, when it goes by, it's gone. All right. We have a theme song to go out with. This is For the Last Hope. Good night.
Goodbye to you, my trusted friend. We've known each other since we were 9 or 10. Together we've climbed hills and trees, learned of love and ABC, skinned our hearts and skinned our knees. Goodbye, my friend, it's hard to die when all the birds are singing in the sky. Now that the spring is in the air, pretty girls are everywhere. Think of me and I'll be there. We had joy, we had fun, we had seasons in the sun, but the hills that we climbed were just seasons out of time. Goodbye, Papa, please pray for me. I was the black sheep of the family. You tried to teach me right from wrong. Too much wine and too much song. Wonder how I got along. Goodbye, Papa, it's hard to die when all the birds are singing in the sky. Now that the spring's in the air, little children everywhere, when you see them I'll be there. We had joy, we had fun, we had seasons in the sun, but the wine and the song, like the seasons, have all gone. We had joy, we had fun, we had seasons in the sun, but the wine and Michelle, my little one, you gave me love and helped me find the sun. And every time that I was down, come around and get my feet back on the ground. Goodbye, Michelle, it's hard to die.